for Inside Utah Politics with Lindsay Ayres.
Today we are glad you found us, whether it's on News for Utah Plus, our streaming app that you can download on Apple TV, Roku, or Amazon Fire. Maybe you're watching us on YouTube as well. Wherever you are, we're glad you're with us. Joining me today for all things political analysis, Sarah Real and Rusty Cannon. How are you guys?
Good.
Okay, so Sarah, you are of sparkly jacket fame, and Rusty, you are Utah's very own.
Apparently today.
How do you feel about those titles?
It's humbling.
Yeah.
Humbling, yes.
This is reason for you to watch us on TV as opposed to just listen to us in podcast form because we have fun, cool stuff to look at.
And you get to see Sarah's jacket.
Yes, and I'll always be repping some sort of women's sports shirt, which today is the Utah Stars, our former WNBA team. I deeply would like back.
Alternate name for Sarah is Utah Women's Sports Czar. Yeah. That's what she wants to be.
Looking for that job. If anyone has it, please reach out.
I think
ASAP.
It could be a cabinet position, don't you think? Secretary of Women's Sports, don't you think?
Yes.
In Utah?
I think so.
I mean, I know some people. Maybe I can put in a good word. We'll see. All right, let's dive into our topics today because we have so much to talk about. Obviously, Utah's redistricting ruling is still shaking up Utah's political world. I mean, I've labeled it as a bombshell. Would you guys disagree that it's anything other than that?
It's a bombshell.
Yeah. No, yeah. It's significant. It's a huge change.
It's a huge change. Yeah. It's really shifting up the political makeup of Utah's congressional delegation, or at least it has the potential to in the upcoming elections. It also could impact the makeup of Congress with margins so narrow to favor Republicans at this point, but we don't know how that will change come 2026. So guys, let me just get your blush reactions since I haven't seen you or talked to you since this ruling came out. I know we had an episode Tuesday where we talked about it a little bit, but tell me how you're feeling today.
Well, I guess I can go first. I was quite shocked. I thought there was a 5% chance she'd do what she did, and I guess that 5% came true. 11:50 at night on Monday night, she, as we now know, threw the map out and chose one of the plaintiff's maps. I've spent the last 24, 40 hours trying to figure out, you know, what can be done about the ruling. I think there's not a lot that can be done at this point other than try to appeal. I would hope the legislature would aggressively try to appeal it. That's your best route versus going down the road of impeachment and that kind of stuff. I think that has a bad taste to it. As much as people might think there's a very good reason to do it, I think that's just not a very good PR move, so to speak. But as far as the ruling goes, it is what it is. I think what's interesting is if the objective was to get sort of a fair map put in place in Utah, now you have a very lopsided map in a few different ways. Number one, you have a Democrat district that is very liberal, and we can talk about that in detail, and three districts that are very Republican. So in my mind, in the future now, you're going to have a very left of center member of Congress in that donut hole and three very, very far right members in the other three districts. And none of them will have any motivation to come to the middle, which is where I think most Utahns want it to be. I think in my mind, this is sort of backfired where you now have a district where even a moderate Democrat might have a problem winning. And those other few districts that are so solidly red, I think they're some of the most red in the country at this point based on early analysis.
Plus 50, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Sarah, it's nuts how
Red
they
are. Sarah, weigh in, because a lot of the criticism I'm hearing right now is the judge, you know, tried to stop gerrymandering with a gerrymandered map. I mean, is that map gerrymandered?
Listen, my goal from the beginning and my hope and dream and desires have always been for four competitive districts or close to competitive or future competitive districts. That has always been it. My big takeaways are, one, I firmly believe that Prop 4 was what the people asked for. And I go back to, if the legislature would have just followed Prop 4 and the voters who had asked for it, they would have better. There would be no Democratic seat right now. There would be no Democratic district. So to me, it's a big play stupid games, win stupid prizes to the legislature. You brought this on yourself. And I think they're not used to having all of the power. So, of course, they're going to be fighting as they usually do. But I look back on court cases, talking about the judge. I look back, first of all, I think it grosses me out. And constitutionally, I think that not getting what you want, you don't just immediately go to impeachment. And I was trying to remember a time when the Utah courts have ruled against something I truly believed in. And I looked back and I thought about the state school board becoming partisan. The Utah legislature passed a bill that said that the state school board would now become partisan. To me, that was one of the biggest mistakes they've ever made. It has absolutely hurt education in the state of Utah. Partisan politics have no place when we're planning and strategizing and governing our schools. And I talk to Becky Edwards all the time about how she voted no on it, and she's still mad about it. Well, people took that to the courts and they said, we don't like this. This is a, you know, we don't think this is constitutional. And we lost. And now we have a partisan state school board. And so I didn't go to immediately to say, oh, well, now I think we should impeach that, you know, political judge for what they've done. I just said, well, we lost. And well, that's the point of the justice.
Yeah. And I hear you. But the issue over impeachment is that, and Rusty, correct me if Republicans don't believe this, but by and large, the arguments I'm hearing is that she didn't have the constitutional authority to pick that map.
Yeah.
And so because she did, that's where they feel like she violated, you know, potentially a high crime or misdemeanor here.
Yeah, but if you feel confident in that, you go appeal it and you win, right? I mean, that's the track that you should go. I think personally this should go to the U.S. Supreme Court at some point where it gets resolved once and for all, because I think she would be overturned.
Yeah, I think we can go back and forth, you know, over and over again about Prop 4 and who has the ultimate authority to draw the district, to draw the maps, and this and that. But that's the whole point of the judicial branch, is they help solve those, right? And we got to the point where this is what the ruling was. And this is their way of trying to make sense of our Constitution and Prop 4. And that's how she ruled. And so if they do want to, I agree with Rusty. They should just appeal it.
You know, well, let's make note. She agrees with me. First of all, I consider that a win. I'm kidding, of course. But
we've
to your point.
We've done it.
Exactly. But to your point, Sarah, you wanted competitive maps. That is not what we have. We now have completely uncompetitive districts. We have, from a bipartisan standpoint, you have a solid blue seat and three very, very red seats at this point.
Yeah.
They will have no motivation to come to the middle, any of them. Whether it's left or right, they can stay hard in their edges, and there'll be no motivation to come through. The primaries are where these battles will be fought, and the general election will be a complete afterthought. Maybe I'm being hyperbolic,
no.
but I think that is what we have because of a map that she chose from the plaintiffs that is, you know, I don't know what the reasoning behind it is. It's totally gerrymandered. Look what it does. It carves Alpine out in that yellow district.
Right.
Why? I mean, separate from Highland, there's all kinds of issues. You have to drive like 7 hours from the bottom corner of that left map all the way up to the. It's not compact. There's so many different issues in here.
And if someone can ski every ski resort in the state of Utah in one day, I'm not worried about the driving distance of that district. But I will say, I go back to my main point. You play stupid games, you win stupid prizes. The legislature played stupid games, and this is the stupid prize that they deserve. So that's where we're at.
I think it's so interesting to look at our political geography and or our actual geography, where that small District 1 is so geographically small compared to District 3 that it's like we have such concentration of population along the Wasatch Front that
1/3 of our population lives in Salt Lake County, so it makes sense. And, you know, I'm looking, and I know that it's leaning very blue, and I get that. But I don't think how much Kamala won that district is really that telling. I mean, she was running against Trump, mm-hmm. and during his second, you know, election for president. And there are a lot of people, especially in Utah, there were a lot of Republicans who probably voted for Dan McKay and Kamala Harris. And so I don't think that is a really good scale to saying how blue it is. I think there's other factors or other data that we could look at to really see how blue it is. And I think that will lead into seeing who else is going to put their hat in the ring for that.
Rusty, what do you think about the makeup of this district? Because +24 Kamala Harris, to Sarah's point, she doesn't think that it shows the makeup. But at the same time, you're saying Ben McAdams might not even be able to win in this district because he's too moderate.
Yeah, I think it's somewhere in the middle. Sarah has a point. It might not be that to that extreme. But even if you dial it down, it's very, very blue. But the other thing, look at what it's done to the Democrats that live in the southern part of Salt Lake County. They're completely out of the mix now. They're in the green district. Was that District 4?
Well,
they have no
chance now. There are some southern portions of Salt Lake County that are in Utah County. So perhaps they're trying to keep that community together. Mm-hmm. By carving it.
But
there.
Also, I look at Salt Lake County. Yes, we have Jenny Wilson, Natalie Pinckney, Suzanne Harrison, Lanny Chapman. But the majority of legislators in Salt Lake County are Republican. And so I don't know if that's really even telling. If the southern part of Salt Lake County is, you know, carved out, fine. That's where, you know, Ken Ivory or whoever's at Perucci and all of those that live down there in the southern part of Salt Lake County. So If they all get elected year after year and they blow out the Democrats, it's not really that telling to me.
Rusty, were you making the point that they chopped off the conservative part of the southern part of Salt Lake County?
Well, what I'm saying is the Democrats that live in the southern part, they're now in district, what is that, 4, the green district on the map. They are completely out of the water. I mean, meaning they have no chance of having any representation from a Democrat in the district ever, ever, ever. Like, that's an R plus what?
20 or 30 or 50. Yeah.
I mean, it's completely controlled by Republican. The same with the yellow district, same with the purple district on that map. It's 4 extreme seats at this point. I thought the whole point behind this was to get the opposite, which is competitive seats. These are not competitive at all.
Well, I think there's a disconnect between what was the outcome, right? Because the outcome was not supposed to be partisanship in any sort of way, right?
But that's what we got. We have four partisan seats.
I hear you, but like, there's no way to kind of, I mean, is there a way to kind of tell that? I mean, short of, you know, testing the map for partisan symmetry, but you're not unduly favoring a party, or are you?
Yeah, that's where it's tricky. And if we would have just stuck with Prop 4 and the legislature wouldn't have thrown a fit for not getting what they wanted, then we would have better districts, better competitive districts. And so I can't feel bad. I can't feel bad for the Republicans, but I can't feel bad about this map, because this is what we deserve after fighting it and fighting it over and over again and putting it through this whole mess that we ended with a little donut map.
I would like to see the legislature's lawyers actually win a case one of these days.
Seriously.
Seriously. Like, yeah, I mean, it's almost comical at this point. Do you ever win anything?
I mean, taxpayers are paying for those lawyers. So.
And a lot of that wouldn't even be necessary if they just passed better laws. That's, you know, one point, too.
Interesting. Okay, so let's talk about who's running in these districts. Before we get to the Democrats, because we know that this district is pulling out all the Democrats out of the woodwork. Rusty, I want your take on what happens to the Republicans here, because one of these congressional members of Congress gets boxed out.
Yeah. I think that's a very sensitive conversation right now. I mean, if you look at it this way, there's not room for 4. Four Republicans in that map, and so a decision will have to be made. In addition, let's say Republicans are successful in overturning Prop 4 on the 26th ballot. Mm-hmm. I personally think that is likely to happen. Then you go back to a map, so you possibly have some people shifting twice within a 2 to 4 year period in a district. Nobody wants to do that. It's a very tough conversation. I have no idea where it lands.
Sure. Sarah, you're shaking your head.
It just sounds like so much money wasted. Sometimes I look at all the money that we spend in campaigns, and even looking at the Democrats, you know, I think right now we have Senator Kathleen Reby and former Congressman Ben McAdams and former Salt Lake County Mayor have been a for sure. They're in. They've said it, right? Mm-hmm. But I know that more are going to join. It's just a matter of time. I think we'll find out in the next week. But I just think of all of the money that's going to be sucked into those primaries. I think of all of the money that's going to be sucked into overturning Prop 4 on the ballot. I think of all the, it drives me crazy, because it's, especially if it does exactly what Rusty was saying, goes back and forth, even more money spent on these elections. And sometimes it feels a little pretty icky to me.
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting to watch for sure. Okay, so Kathleen Reby, state senator from Cottonwood Heights area, and Ben McAdams have both announced their congressional bids. But as to Sarah's point, we know some more people are probably going to jump in. Rusty, what do you make of these two folks right now jumping in? And I mean, have they frozen the field at this point?
Oh, no, no. I think any sensible Democrat, this is your chance, right? It's an open seat. Very, very blue seat. This will be decided, in my mind, in the primary. I would fault any that you need to get in if you're even thinking about it. Obviously, I'm being a little biased here.
Just get in
and just go at each other. But no, in all seriousness, Kathleen Reby, I actually some funny stories. Know her well from working up on the Hill when I was at the Taxpayers Association. I would get so frustrated listening to her on the floor when she just rail against bills that we were supporting. I'd mute the TV because I'd get so. But then again, we got along. And so she'd see me in the hall one day, I remember. She actually voted for one of the tax cut bills. And she said, "We need to take a picture. I voted for one of your bills." And so we literally took a picture in the hallway. And then in a hearing, this was a year or two later, she actually took a minute to, she turned on her mic and said, "Hey, Mr. Chair, I'd like to note that I actually agree with Rusty on this bill."
Oh.
And like that in the record, because it was a shock.
Yeah.
But what I'm trying to say is she knows how to have a relationship, even though we're very barbed towards each other on policy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think she's going to have quite the shot. I think Ben McAdams thought he'd have an easy, if he thought he had an easy race, I think this turned into a jungle.
Okay, so do we think that he is too moderate for this district? And the other thing I want to bring up is he has a little bit of a independent problem, right? Where he endorsed Emma McMullen, right, in the Mike Lee race back in 2022. Remember this? Where the big plan was to get Evan McMullen elected and oust Senator Lee. That failed epically, really. Are Democrats still holding grudges from that?
I mean, I think that Democrats are so used to barely squeaking by in this state that they tend to play safe. And so I think that that's actually a Ben McAdams advantage. I'd like to see more people jump in this race. I'm not sure what Mayor Erin Mendenhall is thinking, but I'd love to see her in the race. We've seen that Caroline Gleick has kind of hinted at, what do you think? Should I run? She made that announcement today. I think that I'm still not sure if he's too moderate, because I think that Democrats tend, I mean, we elected Joe Biden. So we play it safe. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that's working, really. So I'd love to see some different faces. And I like Ben, appreciate him a lot. I think he's amazing. But I'd like to see some mix-ups, some changes. I'm tired of the same people running for the same seats all the time. And I think that the Democrats will forgive him fully, and they already have.
Hmm. Rusty, what do you think?
Well, I think this is going to be very interesting to see with this new district, just how blue it really is and who comes through in primaries. I'd be curious to see if Sarah has a different opinion. I think you could have up to like 10 people, like serious contenders in this race. Is that too high of a number? I think it could be that many.
10 with 50% being serious contenders.
Okay,
I think that would probably be
so. Five serious contenders, is that a fair?
But are there people that we don't know their names yet? Because one thing about running for elections, even in Utah and even in a safe district, is you need name ID.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I mean, you do need it. I don't know.
Yeah, Caroline Gleick came kind of out of nowhere. I mean, I knew who she was from the outdoor world, but she came out of nowhere and not a lot of people knew her, and now she has great name recognition. So you never know who might pop in. But I see in the end, when it comes to delegates knowing the party, I think that they're going to stay loyal. They might end up staying safe. And I think that if Erin Mendenhall jumps into the race, her and Ben would be a battle.
Mm, that would be very interesting.
I mean, one race you can look back at, you remember the governor's race during COVID in Utah when there was, Huntsman, Cox,
yes.
Thomas
yes.
Wright, yep. Hughes, Amy Winder Newton.
Yeah.
You had, and that turned out way different than I thought it would. I mean, yeah. I think it might be the same case here where you just don't know how this is going to turn out.
Yeah. Politics can change on a dime really quickly.
Okay.
Before we leave the redistricting topic, is there anything else you guys want to add that I didn't ask you? I mean, this just is flipping Utah on its head. So many people just like, what happens now? I mean, barring any appeals, maybe this is the question. Do you think this map holds for 2026, or is there anything that can get in its way?
Oh, I think we're stuck with this for 26.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think there's a few things. One is, I think Rusty and I both want the same thing, which is that we want competitive, fairly drawn districts.
Yeah.
Politics get in the way of that. And that's just how it is. That's how it works.
Or a judge.
The other thing I wanted
Sorry,
that,
I just had
on that
too soon, Rusty, too soon.
Well, my second point was actually that I think impeaching her, and I actually have like my heart breaks for her, the judge, who's like had a very successful career, is very well respected, and is now being attacked. And I hate that. And so I want that rhetoric to go away. I don't approve of McPherson blowing up the internet talking about the bill he's filed. I think that's just icky. I think we need less of that in politics right now and more of this, like, looking for competitive seats and doing what the voters want, which is they want to be able to pick the best candidate to represent them.
Lots to pay attention to in Utah for sure. Want to get to one national topic before we wrap for the day, and that is that the government is back open.
It is open.
Yay! Did anyone feel it?
Every time I teach, because I teach on Mondays and Wednesdays, political science at Sully Community College, and none of that that I'm saying today represents a college, but every day I'd come in, I'm like, guys, the government's still shut down. We're going to learn about it, but it's shut down. And when I came in and they were like, Sarah, the government's back open. And I was like, I'm trying to be excited about this, but I feel like it's going to shut back down in January with
really?
That deadline.
Okay.
I do.
Yeah, Rusty, we kind of saw both sides come to the table a little bit, although it doesn't appear the Democrats really got what they want as far as those ACA subsidies. What do you make of the deal that shook out and how this all went down?
I mean, you're going to call me biased, I know, but I'm going to say it just how I feel. That was a complete waste of time. They basically took the same deal that was offered 10 days into it. It didn't need to be 40 days. They get a vote on a bill that will fail in the Senate. That's what they wanted. They really got nothing out of it other than people getting scared about their SNAP benefits. Maybe we'll have more of a conversation on the ACA subsidies, those kinds of things. This accomplished absolutely nothing.
It did, and I could not agree more. And I think that Democrats bowed out first, and that was what it came down to. It was a game of chicken, who's going to go? And It was a waste of time, and it gives me little to no faith in Congress and their ability to really do anything.
And what changed this time, and I think I mentioned this before, is when the Freedom Caucus decided that because President Trump is now president, they're okay with continuing resolutions all of a sudden, that changed the game for Schumer. He can't play both sides on the Republican House side. They all got along and passed a clean CR. This was going to be a waste of time from day one. And then, you know, I think that's been proven right. It was a complete and total waste of time.
Well, and we haven't actually passed a budget yet, right? We've just funded a CR, which
yeah, to the end of January.
So
I don't, in answer to your question, I don't think there'll be another one at the end of January. I think if they failed to do anything here, why would you do it again? Yeah. I mean, I think it would damage them more, but I could be wrong.
Yeah. Do you think that voters remember this come 2026? Did either side pick up or lose their principles here?
They clearly were thinking about it when we saw the Virginia and New Jersey governor races. That clearly was something that they saw and that they found were disappointed in what the Republican Party was doing. But I also love their message. Both of those governors ran on messages of partisanship. I mean, bipartisanship. They were there. They want to collaborate. They're doing like a Gretchen Whitmer, like build the damn roads. Like they're just focused on practical issues, not these culture war, you know, BS that we hear all the time from Congress. And I think that was really effective. And I think that is what voters are going to care about is like, I'm done with the politics. Show me what you can do for me. We clearly are in a bad place and I'm tired of all the arguing.
Rusty, any ramifications for 26?
I think voters, and this is unfortunate, voters have a very short memory. I think within 6 to 8 months, they're not even going to remember that there was, I mean, they'll remember there was a shutdown for those that were severely affected.
Yeah.
But for the majority of the population, they won't even remember. They won't remember whose fault it was. I guess you could see it pop up in campaign ads. But in today's world, the news cycle moves so fast that just this will soon be forgotten. They'll move on to the next thing.
Yeah, my Christmas wish is that everyone in Congress leaves Congress and we start over fresh.
There we go.
I think a lot would welcome that.
Yeah.
Yes. It's the most wonderful time of the year. Do we get some Epstein files soon, do we think?
And I guess my question with that is it going to matter for Trump if that is released? And
no. And
honestly, my biggest message with the Epstein files has always been, if we believed women, we wouldn't have to release any files. So,
Rusty?
Yeah, I think it's a dead issue. I'm surprised it's still being brought up.
We just want to know what's in them at this point.
I know, but like if there was something shocking, it would have come out in the previous 4 years when another administration had all that.
Hmm. All right. Well, we'll have to see.
And no one cares what Bill Clinton did. We're over it.
That's true.
We have short memories. Yeah. We've moved on.
Yeah.
All right, you guys, Sarah Real, Rusty Cannon, thank you for your perspectives today.
Thank you.
We so appreciate it. There is a lot to follow here in Utah politics in particular. I want to make a special plug for my show, Inside Utah Politics, that airs Sundays at 8 a.m. and 4 p.m. This week, Representative Candace Perucci, who didn't close the door on impeachment of Judge Diana Gibson, but also said they're kind of not actively pursuing it at this time, but all legal options are on the table, she said. And then Ben McAdams will join us as well to kind of walk through his run and what he plans to do to win a seat in Congress in Utah's newly redistricted lines. Hi, Peter.
I'm biased, but I'm going to say it's a good one, folks. It's watch this Sunday.
It's a
strong
show.
Episode.
Peter said they were sitting in the control room like, ooh, this is spicy.
Yeah. Our director turned to me. He hadn't taped the show with us before. He's like, this is a good show.
Yeah.
Tune in Sunday. And on the podcast and on streaming.
Peter, I appreciate you. I'm sorry I didn't even bring you on today.
Oh, no. Listen, sometimes I get to be a viewer and it's lovely.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
It was a fun discussion.
All right. We appreciate you all watching. Tell your friends about us.
And like and subscribe.
Like and subscribe. And we will see you next time.